regulations and ways of looking at things, and how things work when the counties themselves make their own choices as to what regions they want to be in. It really makes for a different kind of operation when there's been that choice involved.
So family care is then overlaid on top of Multnomah County's system and on top of Washington County's? Because I know they have quite different systems.
I have to admit, when it comes to I'm familiar with a lot of MHOs and how they work. When it comes to Multnomah, I'm really out of my depth. Maybe it's very complicated.
It is complicated. In some counties, there is a single fully capitated health plan and a single MHO. Lane County, for instance, you know, the MHO and the fully cap there are just single providers. There's and in Multnomah County, there might be three MHOs that are up there. They have different subsets of the total OHP population there.
I don't want to belabor it, yeah. But I mean, you've gained a great deal of credibility with the committee because you said you don't understand what goes on in Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas counties. So you're scoring points. Yes, sir.
I think the question I've asked really is pertinent. I would like to follow up.
Sure,
more
go
questions.
Ahead.
Because supposedly I'm supposed to know something about this, and frankly, as more as I get into it, the more I realize I know practically nothing about it, and that's after going to multiple meetings. Is it my understanding that we have an overlay of two or three, taking Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas, Wasco, and those kind of just as an example, that we have a fully capitated health plan that takes care of some mental health, and then we have mental health organizations that only take care of mental health, and they are overlaid each other, but populations there decide to join one group or the other group. That's the way I think it works. And we have mental health... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think you're right.
And we have mental health funds and physical medicine funds flowing into fully capitated health plans, and some of which take care of mental health and physical health. And then we have another flow of funds strictly to mental health.
That is correct.
So you have those two plans kind of with an overlap here in the middle. You have one that does mental and physical health, one does just mental health, and there's an overlap in between, but they're different people in each one.
They're the same people in the MHOs as are in the fully capitated health plans.
Same patients?
The same membership, yes. The fully capitated health plans provide physical health and a somatic benefit, which is the mental health type services that physicians do. If you have a relatively simple depression, a physician can prescribe Prozac for you. But the physicians don't really want to manage the more complicated mental health conditions. They don't provide the therapy that people need. So, and what has been demonstrated nationally and locally, I think, in the state of Oregon, is that mixing those mental health dollars into the physical health dollars dilutes the mental health benefit and the mental health services that the folks who need mental health treatment are likely to get, and it places an additional burden on the physicians who really don't want those challenging patients, those mental health conditions presenting in their office when they're really trained to be doing, diagnosing a sinus infection and treating that.
A follow-up. So to make sure I understand, because I think I do understand this part of it, the fully capitated health plans that do some mental health are primarily taking care of mild mental health problems, things like depression and anxiety, or the MHOs, the mental health organizations that are capitated, are really taking care of the acute and severe and chronically mentally ill people.
That's true, and I'd just like to comment on the commercial health care side. That's how that world is set up, too. There's physical health plans, and about 90% of mental health benefits are carved out to organizations that are the equivalent of our MHOs. They might be Magellan or Value Options or a number of these specialty companies, but that is the national standard. And it's actually based on research that was done in the 70s and 80s that showed the value of having organizations that specialize in overseeing mental health services. They got better outcomes.
One last question is...
Can I make one additional comment?
Yeah.
Physicians do are sort of medically oriented. And what if you come in there, what you're going to come out with is a prescription for something. They aren't really trained and oriented towards sitting down and spending time talking with you, figuring out what's going on in your house that's causing you distress, and you know, identifying the stressors and non-medication ways of resolving issues. So they don't do mental health treatment. And the mental health treatment is really funded through the managed care organizations and then provided through contractors.
Well, and that's fine. I understand that explanation. That makes sense to me. But under that explanation, just to take home and ABHA, then you should have another box in here for COIS.
That's right. We've actually got three different kinds of arrangements. In Lincoln County, there is no physical health plan. So all those members for their physical health are open card. Benton County is in IHN, and our three eastern counties are all part of COIS. And I have regular quarterly meetings with IHN and COIS, and we actually work together quite well.
Well, and I'm not trying to pick on your chart, because mm-hmm. it's actually, excellent, helps me graphically picture where the organizations are. I guess what I'm trying to get at is there something different going on with family care, why they are then, based on your explanation, Bruce, functionally all of the managed care organizations are providing some level of mental health service, but you went out of your way to identify family care in the Washington, I assume Clackamas, but certainly Multnomah counties. Are they doing something different than this? We see a given percentage of lower level mental health.
No, they're not doing. I don't think as a mental health organization, they have the same contract we do with the state. This is really just represents the complications of their particular geography.
Can I ask?
Yeah, Representative Bates.
I would wait for Representative.
I was just trying to follow this conversation and having more of my understanding of Kaiser is a little more complicated for me, but is it a difference between which professionals you're insuring? I mean, a primary care doc is going to be insured under the health plan contract, even if that doc is treating a long-term chronic schizophrenic with antipsychotic diseases. That's going to be covered in the And the social worker, the psychologist, the psychiatrist are much more likely to be covered under the mental health piece of the coverage. I mean, isn't that essentially what differentiates the two?
We have psychiatrists working with our organizations as well as social workers and psychologists. The mental health services provided under the somatic side of the Oregon Health Benefit, it's just limited what they the part they address. Whenever there is a need that goes beyond what the primary care physician can provide in his office or beyond the services that can be provided in an emergency room, basically everything else falls under the mental health organization. So it's a very limited set of benefits.
I can follow up, I mean, but it basically is divided by profession.
Yes.
I mean, you don't have psychiatrists being covered under the medical program, even if
Correct.
They happen to be sitting in a in a primary care office.
Right, there are physicians who work for the fully caps, but the psychiatrists work for us. So when they want another level
and
of evaluation and service.
And social workers.
Correct.
I mean, essentially a division by professional work.
That's a reasonable way to look at that.
Representative
I'm going to try to sum this up in a way that makes sense to me, and please disagree if you can, if you want to. I think what you've done here is what we've been doing for the last 4 weeks is comparing apples to oranges. It's gotten me so confused that I'm a physician, by the way, that works inside this mess, okay? And I can see Gina smiling back there because I think she knows exactly where I'm going right now. I think I finally got this straight in my head, okay? We have two ways of delivering mental health to people in this state, and we have separated these people out by the type of disease they have, which is a very logical thing to do. What we've said is we will take care of some people with mild mental disease, primarily depression and anxiety, and let them be taken care of under fully capitated health plans or fee-for-service. and physicians who are primary care can write prescriptions for antidepressants and mild anxiety medications and maybe refer that patient for some counseling, but they don't do it themselves. The other group is a group of severely ill people. These are the psychotic people in our society. They are taken care of by psychiatrists, and they are sifted out based on their illness, and what follows that illness is who treats them. Obviously, psychologists, psychiatrists, and social workers. And you've developed wraparound systems for these people because they need them. So you're looking at organizations here, some of which are mental health organizations that take care of the severely mentally ill.
Representative Bates, can I just ask you a question? If that acute schizophrenic or that chronic schizophrenic breaks his leg, they're not going to, that person, I mean, it isn't really a division by person. It's really a division by the profession that treats them.
Potentially, but basically what happens, because I take care of some chronically, I'm going there, okay?
Exactly.
Okay, just give me a second to make it straight. So what you've got here is laid out in front of us, organizations such as Care Oregon, which is a fully capitated health plan that takes primarily care of people physically, but takes care of these minor things, minor mental illnesses. And you're comparing them to Jefferson as an example in my area, JBH. Okay, JBH doesn't do any physical care at all. They do strictly mental illness, and they take care of the sickest and the worst. And they take care of the people I don't take care of in my office. There also is a variation within the counties under them that's significant. But you're trying to compare, we've been trying to compare, two different types of organizations here. And that's the confusion I think we've had. And as Representative Grinlich says, when one of those schizophrenic patients who was under control by Jefferson breaks a leg or has bronchitis, they come to my office and I do see them.
Right.
But they're not in my managed care plan. They're in somebody else's. Okay?
Is that true?
That's true.
I mean, aren't they in both plans?
No, they're not. Okay, I see them a fee for service when that patient comes to my office, and then the mental health plan they're under is Jackson County or Jefferson County. Okay, they take care of that severe mental illness, and I think what we've been doing here is mixing these two plans up and overlaying when we shouldn't have. What we should be looking at is a map that says here are the pure mental health plans we have. Okay, they take care of the severely ill mental people, mental illnesses we have. And here are these other plans we have on the other side that do take care of some mental illnesses, but not severe ones. Then we could really see what we're looking at.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think by the end of the afternoon you're going to take that understanding and it's going to get very detailed. You're going to understand the specifics of what we do. But I think that's a very good umbrella description.
The only thing I want to clarify, and that's very succinct, thank you, because I've been wrestling with the same thing, is that they're not necessarily in both plans. I thought they were in both plans.
In Care Oregon, for example, doesn't Care Oregon take care of... I mean, Care Oregon has the whole population, and then the mental health component for that population is carved out.
It varies by county. In Benton
so
County...
Different yeah. of the contractors or the plans do it. It could be that way. They could be dual enrolled, if you will.
That's right.
Is that
Mr. Chair. You think you have patients that are in two capitated plans, one
MHO and one fully cap. It can only be one of each. There can't be two. You can't be in two MHOs and you can't be in two fully caps. You could be in one MHO and one fully cap, or be in one MHO and perhaps the open card because there is no fully cap. But you're always in an MHO because we cover all of Oregon.
Depending on the offering in the geographic area.
Right, where you happen to live.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would still offer that even though everyone's in an MHO that has severe mental illness, and they might be in a plan that also offers capitation for fully capitated health plans, mm-hmm. that the map you're looking at here still confuses us. And the reason is family care shouldn't be on this map. We're talking about MHOs. They don't offer, as an example, they don't offer services for the severely mentally ill, I don't believe. Anybody here from family care?
Where's Ruby? She was just here. I know she's Care Oregon.
I think
Care
Oregon.
Yeah, and see, that was the original question, why I'm sitting here going,
But it's, I think it's for a specific population that's determined by the local county. Is that, okay, this particular population is so different in our area, we want it handled by a different provider.
But that's pretty weird.
But the importance of it is we get two different flows of money at $400 million apiece coming one through one group and one through the other group, and we're trying to match them up. And that's another, that's a huge problem for us.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and Ruby can clarify this, but I think another possibility for Multnomah is that perhaps Family Care bought into a plan that was there prior to Verity, and they may, if you own part of an MHO that was pre-existing. Peter Davidson once has explained to me there was another
twist
plan in Multnomah County, and I believe it was like a pre-existing type of program that Family Care kind of picked up on, so they've got a small contract there. Well,
and that could, because I know Family Care was right in various parts of the state at various times.
I think there's two separate, entirely separate accountings. I mean, I think people are either in a managed care system or they're in an open card system. And
right,
those are all the people, and they're in either one or the other. And then independently, they're in a mental health system.
Right.
That's right.
And those are two independent calculations.
That's right.
Have one more thing.
Yeah. If the given region offers, I mean, or they could be in mental health and an open card.
Open card.
Or they could be in a fully capitated health or a fully capitated mental health organization, depending on the area.
Right. In every county, there's an MHO, but in every county, there is not necessarily a fully cap.
But can I ask a question about that?
Hold on. Let staff.
Well, it might help at some point, Chair, I think, to bring in maybe DHS again, because even on their website, they have a rather kind of a menu approach. If you're in X county, they have the fully capped health plans that you can pick from. If there's, I think, more than one, I'm not sure, but, or MHOs, if there's more than one, you just pick one from each category, and even a dental care organization if it exists. So it's similar to our own health plans. You just pick one here and pick one there, and so it's not that similar to typically what the state gets as well. You pick a health plan, a dental plan, a mental health plan.
But the prime issue is, what's the population base for your capitation?
Our membership?
Yeah, it's not sick people.
It's Oregon health plan members in our counties who are enrolled in managed care.
And in a county, you have in your capitation rate 100% of the Oregon health plan members
open
capitated, open or not, capitated for a mental health benefit.
There are probably closer to 90%.
Okay.
There's a percentage of people that start on open card and move into lane care at any given, or into MHOs at any given point in time.
And that's a completely separate calculation from whether they're in a medical plan or not in a medical plan. I think that's
in terms
point
of the capitation rate
and in terms of their service and in terms of what they're responsible for. And that basically is independent of whether they come and see Alan for medical services or they don't come and see him for medical. That's a very different issue.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have these widely divergent structures for physical health and for mental health, which I'm guessing have to do with viewing mental health as not necessarily a medical condition in the past. But as we've come to understand medical condition as a disease of the brain, are we finding any process through which kind of these two structures are merging together, instead of having this huge overlay of normal health plans, if you will, and then mental health plans in addition or separate from that?
So like collaborations between the MHOs and the fully caps?
Or merging of structures?
I would just comment that on a quarterly basis, I have a meeting with top management of IHM, and on a monthly basis, we get together with staff and review individual cases. We call it complex case management, where we look at primarily patients with mental illness who are causing difficulty for the physical health plans, clogging their emergency rooms, taking up lots of physician time, using up lots of resources that could be that could be managed better through close coordination with the mental health providers. And so we facilitate that by having monthly meetings. I'm involved very much in working with COAS on a regular basis because we're partners in the targeted case management pilot, which you've probably heard about, which is an effort to figure out how to better manage 7-Eleven drugs. We have regular meetings with them through our pilot involvement. So working together in collaboration is really important because we do share these members in common.
Thank you. Representative Merkley, you know, one thing that I react a little bit is to this notion that all mental health is sort of a brain or physical disorder. A lot of mental health is really socially and trauma related, and it doesn't need a physical health intervention, that a social mental health, even paraprofessional social support intervention produces significant outcomes at a cheaper cost. In Lane County, we work with our fully capitated health plan for those cases where there is a high, a serious chronic mental illness that would benefit with some sort of medication treatment. So there's a course of medication management. If there is a population of people who the physicians have no interest in managing. It's just too complicated. There's a portion that they are willing to refer for as a consultation with a psychiatrist or a nurse practitioner, get a stable medication management, and then they'll take those patients back. And there's some that they're willing to do a phone consultation. And in Lane Care, we have psychiatrists available for those phone consultations. And then the physicians are comfortable managing something.
Thank you.
Can I just add one thing to that? I think if you turn to page 5 and look at the right-hand column, which describes the services that are provided under managed care, I think we've been a little focused on specifically the types of degrees of people who are involved. What I just want to see, and we're going to come back to this later, is the wide range of services we provide. Starting with the federally mandated services of hospital, outpatient hospital, and physician services. But in addition to that, there's crisis intervention. There's alternatives to hospital where we're able to get people out of the hospital early or prevent them going in to begin with because we've got subacute services and respite services, and we've got a wide range of outpatient services. Many of them are targeted to specific populations. People got DBT groups for people with borderline personality, specific kind of groups for people with schizophrenia. There's a lot of activities that go on that are specific to treating mental illnesses that are just as significant as the degrees of the people who are providing that treatment. But we'll come back to this later. I just want to make that.
Well, one thing is very obvious to me, and that is you did not get Gina's memo about feeding this committee charts, graphs, or maps. So,
memo says don't do that?
Yeah.
Like at the zoo, don't feed the animals.
Yeah.
So we'll go on to page 3. And
moving right along.
Bruce is going to talk about the MHO fundamentals.
Actually, if I could interrupt, I think this is very helpful, I think, particularly to Representative Bates and I.
I would suggest actually you put that on that clear kind of plastic stuff. Get the same map for the fully caps.
Right.
Put it on top of it so you can take it on and off.
Yeah.
I think that would really clarify the situation very quickly.
Yeah, but what we're most interested in and this committee's most interested in is that interface, that relation between the MHOs and the fully capitated health plan in, you know, what given geographic area. That's what we got to get our arms around.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to walk us through page 3 very quickly. There are 10 MHOs, and they cover all the counties in Oregon. Some, like Lane County, are single county organizations. There's multi-county, and there's a very few that are subcontracted to for-profit organizations. The MHOs assume full risk for the population they cover. In sort of national model now is to carve out the mental health or even behavioral health. There's a move towards carving out behavioral health services so they don't get lost in the physical health plans. As Seth mentioned, we provide a full spectrum of flexible services, ranging from prevention outreach all the way up to hospitalization. MHOs are a managed service delivery system. We're not providers. We sort of organize a system of care. We manage utilization, quality, trainings of our providers. We're data-driven and outcome-oriented. OMHAS contract with MHOs, with each MHO, there's a standard contract, so there's a standard across the entire state for our services, encounter data reporting, quality assurance, all those rules that govern us. And what's really important is that counties have significant ownership or operational control of many of the MHOs. This ensures local involvement and oversight. And when I talk more about Lane Care and Lane County in the future, it'd be really evident that the mental health organizations are really integrated around other and partnering with other community organizations, providers, consumer groups, and other governmental system partners out there. And in all counties, to one degree or another, the fully caps are working in partnership with the MHOs to provide coordinated care for our mutual members.
We thought it would be useful to compare and contrast what a fee-for-service system is like and what a managed care system is like. And we have that experience in Oregon, because prior to the Oregon Health Plan, mental health services were all delivered on a fee-for-service basis. So let's try to understand what the difference is. On a fee-for-service basis, services are provided to one individual at a time through one provider at a time. There's no one responsible for coordinating the care of an entire population. ABHA, Lane Care, we have quality management committees that meet on a regular basis. We do surveys. We do various needs assessment that analyze what does this population need in the way of services? What can we do in the way of anticipating those needs and, if possible, preventing healthcare problems occurring before they become acute, before they become expensive? In the fee-for-service model, patients frequently they fall between the cracks because nobody has responsibility to manage them through all possible levels of care they need, because quite often it's just not a matter of going to one provider and you're cured and you're done. Quite often there's a full range of services that can be provided that really meet the needs of that individual, but you have to have a system in place to be able to do that. A fee-for-service model is reactive. It's not proactive. It doesn't anticipate problems. It just, you wait for someone to show up in your emergency room. You wait for someone to show up in your office. You do what you can. You maybe write a referral and hope the member gets there, but you don't have any responsibility beyond that as a provider to see that the member's needs are met beyond what you did as a caregiver, and hope the next guy does a good job. But it's left to hope, not an organization that has the responsibility to attend to the member's needs across a whole episode of care. The fee-for-service system creates incentives to bill as much as possible. The more services I provide, the more I get paid. And to every provider where you show up, that's the incentive. Whereas in a managed care system, you capitate the entire membership. The incentive is to provide appropriate and needed services. To the extent you're providing extra, you can be out of money at the end of the month, as Bruce referred to before.
Hold on
yes.
Just a second. Mr. Bukovian?
Thank you, Chair. That does kind of raise a question I'm always kind of curious. Unlike someone who might go to a physician for a broken arm, the arm's mended and fixed, and there's a performance there. For mental health, what's to prevent, I guess, a not-so-good mental health organization from basically not outreach serving people to the fullest? Basically, if we're talking about mental health problems, how do you kind of set performance standards, ensure quality, that you're really out there serving people to the extent they need it when it's so much mental illness and mental health problems are somewhat ambiguous in terms of how they're treated?
That's a good question. Respond in a couple of ways. Although we have all have different approaches to utilization management, we all have different approaches to quality management, the state sets very specific standards as to what we need to have in place in order to do a proper job of utilization management, quality management, overseeing the needs of our population. Our reports get audited by the state on a regular basis. ABHA was visited 2 months ago by a state team to do a site audit of our managed care organization. And there's considerable state audit and establishing of standards to which we are held. And you can't do that very well on a one-on-one oversight by the state of individual providers. You can do that cost-effectively overseeing a healthcare system. Is that getting it, your question?
Generally, just kind of a follow-up.
Sure.
Internally, then, as you're there's potentially people out there who really need outreach, and you need to go out and find them,
right,
and like a broken arm, that's going to drive them to the bring them to the ER or a doctor's office. That's part of that documentation and assurances you're giving to the state that I guess you're proactively out there.
Yes, sir. We report separately. We have on a quarterly basis a report we give them on. It's called a PE&O report. It's prevention, education, and outreach efforts, where we document both the types of services that are provided and the costs of those services. But we send clinicians in to members' homes when there's a family problem and the families are resistant to coming into their office. We will go out and send people looking under bridges and wherever else they may be to check up on how they're doing. Are they taking medications? Can we provide some services for them? We go out and we go to where the member is, because if you wait for them to come to you, you know where you'll eventually find them, and that's in the hospital. It's not good for their care. It's not good for the financial care of the financial health of the state, because you're paying for a lot of expensive services that you don't need to. But you need a system to be able to manage those expenses in that process.
Ed.
So continuing through my sort of comparing and contrasting a fee for service and managed care, basically talking about a non-system of care versus a system of care, a limited range of services provided under a fee-for-service arrangement and a very extensive set of services under a managed care arrangement, and I'll get into some details of that on the next page. In a fee-for-service system, there's no consumers who participate in decision-making. There's no NAMI family members participating in decision-making as to how the system of care is organized in a given area. Everything is one-off. We have an advisory committee member. We have an advisory committee that is comprised of consumer representatives, representatives from senior agencies, children agencies. We have significant key stakeholder input, and it's not superficial. They really look at what we're doing. They really hold our feet to the fire, and they really have an impact on the kind of systems of care that we develop. You only have that in a managed care environment. We devote a considerable amount of attention to what national best practices are, what research is telling us about the types of services we provide, and we actually do some of our own research to look at a local level as to what's working and what's not working. Individual providers don't have the resources, don't have the time to evaluate on a systematic basis what's working and what is not working. We do. In a fee-for-service system or non-system, there's minimal accountability, few standards. We have significant accountability. We are providing regular reports to the state. There's a significant state and key stakeholder oversight. And in a fee-for-service system, there's very little ability to manage control beyond either reducing payment to providers and limiting access to service. And in a managed care environment, we're in a position to help avoid cost shifting. If we can treat people in our system, attend to their needs, they're not going to end up in jails. And some people obviously will end up in jails. We can't prevent everybody from ending up in jails, but when you have an unmanaged system, you get a much higher percentage of people in jails and other publicly funded programs where they're not going to get the most appropriate care. So it's significant that we have that ability to address cost shifting and to manage utilization and quality. Any questions about that before I go on to the next page?
Can I ask a question? It turns out I need to read a little earlier.
Sure.
Is there any link to alcohol and drug treatment with this? Or are you talking about alcohol and drug as well as traditional mental health?
No.
It's carved some other way?
It is carved another way, and we would hope to have the opportunity at the end of our presentation to talk about how we think the system could be organized more cost effectively and the disconnect between chemical dependency benefit structure and the mental health benefit structure really does create some barriers to integrating our care. The research is very, very convincing that a significant proportion of our population is duly diagnosed, which means they have chemical dependency problems and mental health problems. And we do everything we can to work cooperatively with chemical dependency providers. And sometimes our own agencies, our own county agencies, do provide chemical dependency treatment. In some cases, they don't. But that is a problem that the funding streams are not blended. On the commercial side, as I told you, I worked at Prudential. I worked at Travelers. Employer groups addressed this situation well over 15 years ago when I first started working at U.S. Behavioral Health. It was in the last days. I actually looked at benefit books, and for some employees, we had chemical dependency benefits, and we had mental health benefits, and we managed them separately. They actually had different dollar amounts. They had different rules, this kind of thing. But by 1990, they were gone. I think on the commercial side, there are no mental health benefits separate from chemical dependency. They're all one benefit. They're called behavioral health care benefits. When you hear the rubric behavioral health, what that means is mental health plus chemical dependency. That's where they're ahead of us on the commercial side in that regard.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I've seen figures as high as 50% of folks have co-occurring disorders, and the other day someone used a number of 15%.
It's 60%.
60?
60.
So we see some variances in the numbers that people actually use for co-occurring.
There are different studies. I think just the main thing to understand is it's significant. Do you want to add something to that?
I think if you're looking at the number of folks with serious drug and alcohol problems, a very significant percentage of those will have co-occurring mental health problems. If you look at folks with a mental health problem, you know, you're going to have some percentage of those that have drug and alcohol problems, some percentage that have family violence, some percentage that have, you know, child abuse. You know, there's different ways that population overlaps, because there's a whole lot more people getting served for mental health problems than for chemical dependency problems.
So if you go on to page 5, I talked a little bit about the right-hand column, which are the services that are available through the MHOs. If you looked on the left-hand column and you said, what's the minimum we need to do, and which is going back, I guess, 7 years or so in Oregon's history, to what are the federally mandated mental health services, it's rather limited. It's hospital, outpatient hospital, physician services. And as I indicated before, when you have such a limited benefit, people's end up in jails. You end up with folks in physician offices with difficulties that the physician really can't handle. They end up in various social service agencies. A managed care continuum of services, if there's one word to remember here, it's continuum, is that we're able to provide clients with just the services they need, but not more. they're not left to have to get so sick that they go into the hospital to get served. And this continuum allows us to anticipate problems, head them off at the pass, and it allows us to get folks out of more restrictive settings and provide services in less restrictive settings, which is not only more humane, it's more cost effective. And when we each talk about our own separate organizations, we'll talk about how we contract for these services and what are what the specifics are of how these are provided. Any questions? If you go on to page 6, I'm going to now talk for just a few minutes about ADHA, and then Bruce is going to talk about Lane Care. In terms of our governance structure, well, this chart addresses both our governance structure and our operational structure. And our governing board is comprised of 5 commissioners from the 5 ADHA counties. That's who I report to. They hired me. I'm accountable to them. We also have a budget committee, which consists of citizen members that's advisory to the governing board and reviews the budget, makes recommends, and the governing board, of course, is responsible for adopting the budget. One thing that I worked on a lot when I first came to ADHA was clarifying the communication that was going on within our organization. There was a little bit of difficulty, but I think we really got it straight. And the difficulty that we needed to work on is the inherently different roles that exist, where the counties own ADHA, but ADHA in turn turns around and contracts with the counties for outpatient services. So I work for them and they work for me. Both are true. And it's important to remember which hat we have on. And once you're clear about which hat you have on, is it the I work for you hat or the you work for me hat, communication goes a lot better. But both are true. It does create some complications, but it's actually the beauty of the system. This is really a locally run organization. ADHA is the 5 counties. They own us, and we also establish the standards by which they need to provide outpatient services. Reporting to the governing board, besides the budget committee, is an administrative council, which consists of the 5 mental health directors from the 5 counties, and a financial advisor and a legal advisor. And I participate in that council as well as our consumer specialist and some others. And all policies are reviewed by the administrative council and sent to the governing board for final approval. There's a QM and utilization management committee, which also is comprised of the mental health directors, but also the UM and QM specialists from each of the 5 counties. And they don't look at money. We're going to make a division here. The administrative council is responsible for looking at the money, and the QM-UM committee is responsible for looking exclusively at the quality. It isn't that they're not concerned with efficiency and this kind of thing. They are, but we don't look at the dollar signs here. We really look at what are the standards. Are we upholding the standards? Are we meeting our access standards? Do we have an outcome process that's working that we're learning from? We're auditing charts of hospitals. We're auditing charts of panel providers. We're auditing charts of the agencies themselves, and we're trying to learn from that process and make sure we're doing what we need to do and make changes to the system when we find out that we're not meeting performance standards.
And Q stands for quality.
Yes.
U stands for
utilization.
And M stands for
management. And I don't want to make assumptions. People know what I probably have a pretty good handle on quality management. Do you understand what utilization managers do? Yeah?
I think, okay. Well, go ahead.
Good.
It's a very, very, very important component in managed care. I mean, it's what you do.
Right. Utilization management looks at, here's the resources we have. What is the most appropriate level of care for someone to get services? How long should they be at that level of care? When should we move them on to another level of care? And it coordinates the activities of providing different types of care to people at different time in the episode of their illness. Okay?
Fair enough.
Reporting to the QM committee. We have a credentialing committee, which reviews the application of providers to be a contractor in our network. We have a consumer advocacy committee, which consists of generally three consumer representatives from each of our counties. They come together and they look at our operations in the same way the quality management committee does, but from a consumer perspective, and give us input as to, from their point of view, as to what we're doing, what's working, what's not working, make sure that we're really paying attention to the consumer viewpoint. And they have membership on the quality management committee. So consumers do sit on the quality management committee along with the mental health directors and other professional staff. And as I referred to before, we have an allied agency advisory committee, which has members of social service departments from public sector that who are also working with the same clients that we are. And it's an opportunity to make sure that we're coordinating well, not getting in each other's way, but actually being supportive of one another's efforts. The far right-hand corner shows who my staff are. We've got we're covering 26,000 lives. We've got in our central office a UM specialist, a QI specialist, a consumer affairs specialist, an operation manager, and an accounts payable receptionist, and an ITS coordinator. That actually, the ITS program is another matter. It's not related to, specifically to the mental health capitation that we're talking about. It's a pilot program of the state. It involves a new approach to residential care, and a number of managed care organizations are involved in that pilot program. But this individual is on my staff. Then we contract out for services. We have contracts with individual practitioners who, when the county agencies are essentially full and can't meet their access standards through their own staff, they can contract, they can refer clients on to individual private practitioners to be seen in private practitioner's office. And or if a county agency doesn't have the particular expertise that an individual member needs for their treatment to be successful, they'll refer out to a panel provider who has that particular expertise. So it's a method that allows us to expand the range of professionals who can meet members' needs without hiring so many staff in an agency setting. It's a very cost-effective way to go. The agencies do what they can do cost-effectively, and they use the panels to supplement their capabilities. Then we, as I mentioned before, we subcontract with the county agencies themselves for the bulk of the outpatient treatment. And then we have individual contracts with legal advisors, accounting, financial services, et cetera, some of the specific professional services that you need to support any managed care operation.
And then how are you guys paid?
We are paid on a per member per month basis. And looking back in December, ABHA was paid $851,541 to serve approximately 26,000 members. That was about $31 per member per month, sort of how insurance companies look at payment. With the loss of the standard benefit, our membership is going to drop to $19,207, and our average per monthly payment is going to be $717,000, or about 84% of what we had been getting when the standard population was covered by us.
That's about the same drop. Same drop as your sister organization, COIS, in terms of, you know, round numbers, 25% of the of the population. But I wasn't trying to get at the per member per month. No. I mean, the counties obviously cut you the check.
No, the state cuts us this check, and in this relationship, the counties are subcontracted with us. We have been paying counties, giving the counties 71.62% of our capitation is what we've allocated for outpatient services. So the check comes to the state for us, to us, based on the membership of our five counties and the specific eligibility categories each of those members are in. We retain the approximately 29% for inpatient care and other services, and I'll actually get to that in the next slide.
Okay. Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, the next slide, I tried to keep the financials very simple, just so I'm hopeful it will give you a good, quick picture of how the money flows. So this is our projected budget for 03-04. It's actually had a couple of revisions since I put this together, but it's basically pretty accurate. We're looking at getting a little over $8 million in capitation, which is $35.87 PMPM. Of that money, 81.7% goes to the counties in the form of capitation. 74% is for the services I just described, which is their direct provision of outpatient services. It's actually going up a little bit from that 71% I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, only because we're recategorizing what goes into that payment. 75,000, or almost 1%, is for consumer flex funds. $125,000 is for, we're calling it an inpatient risk pool. It's essentially a pool of money we've put together to incentivize counties to use alternatives to inpatient treatment. Some of the counties that were using less inpatient services than others rightly made the case. We're all essentially contributing the same amount to the inpatient budget, but you know, we're not all using inpatient at the same rate. And so we set up a pool of funds here to provide incentives for those counties who could find alternatives to inpatient treatment to have some financial reward for that. And in next year's budget, I'm trying to convince my board and the mental health directors to have a $175,000 fund that's going to be used to incentivize the accurate encountering of the services that we provide. Because we're finding in October 1, our capitation is going down 15% because the level of services that the level of anticipated services that had been built into our previous capitation wasn't realized through the actual encountering experience of the last 2 years. So I want to put incentives in place for everybody to report accurately all the services that are being provided, and not let the details of everything that's been provided not get to the state. Because if we don't tell you what we've provided, if we've forgotten to tell you we've done this, this, or this, it means our capitation is going to go down. So I want to incentivize people to accurately report that. And then we have a county infrastructure.
Hold on just a second, Seth.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions here. It's the part that a lot of us kind of get drifting away. It's late in the afternoon, you know.
Yes.
More sugar, Kelly.
Quick. Quick.
Mix a little caffeine in that, too, okay? In your system, at the county level, are they capitated for outpatient care?
Yes. That's this.
And if they send someone to a local hospital for in-hospital treatment, either overnight or longer, few days, week, mm-hmm. stabilize them. Who pays for that?
That ABHA, the central office.
It doesn't come out of that county's budget?
No. No. All the counties have pooled all the capitation money to ABHA. They get 70 here in next year's budget, 74% of it back to provide the outpatient services. We retain the rest to do a bunch of other things. Though, as you see from this list, there's a few other things that go directly to the counties, a bunch of other lines of funding that amounts to almost 82% of the overall funding going to the counties directly. We're retaining and paying about 10% for inpatient services, and the balance, which is 8.1%, is for our internal operations at ABHA.
Paul, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please.
So at the county level, if you're seeing a patient, you hospitalize, you decide to make the decision to hospitalize, it doesn't come out of your local budget. It comes out of the overall budget for the entire group.
That's correct.
What hospitals do you use to hospitalize in your group? When you got two counties on the coast, and you jump across the range and pick up the other counties east of the mountains, what hospitals do you use?
The primary facilities we use are Good Samaritan Hospital, which is in Corvallis, St. Charles, which has limited psychiatric capabilities, they basically have a hold room, but we have a very good alternative to hospital treatment facility called Park Place, where we can provide actually the bulk of acute care services to people who are living on the east side. We also sometimes have clients going to Salem Hospital and sometimes Portland Hospitals too, either for specialty services, which aren't available with these hospitals, or just because the members just, they are in Portland when they have their psychiatric problems and that's where they're served initially. We also have other alternative facilities. There's Truman Recovery Center in Newport, and there's several others that we use as alternatives to hospitals.
Well, Mr. Chair, why did you decide to set up an organization which, in which you can get someone off your books by hospitalizing them?
I don't understand how they're off our books.
They're off the books of the particular county. They're on the books of the whole organization. Why did you decide to set it up that way?
The nature of insurance is to share risk. So the counties all came together, became a managed care organization that could share risk. So if Benton County is having a particular bad year, you know, some of that, the slack is being picked up by the contributions of the other four counties and vice versa. The nature, that's why you have car insurance. Why I have health care insurance is that I'm pooling essentially my resources together with others to mitigate risk. Is that?
Mr. Chair, I would argue that the car insurance scenarios get you in trouble because if I have a bunch of accidents, my car insurance goes up. If I have a bunch of accidents in Benton County with mental health people.
That's what the inpatient risk pool is about.
That's how you tried to fix it.
Right. That's a way of trying to balance the concept of sharing risk with recognizing that there's different experiences and some of what happens does relate to your own individual behavior.
Last question.
Take your time.
Did you see a significant variation amongst the counties and what, as far as what the program actually looked like on the ground and how many people were being hospitalized and what was rolling out, or was it rather uniform?
And are you talking specifically about the inpatient utilization rate or just about the range of services and the type of services provided by the individual counties?
Cost per member per month per county. Is that what you're trying to drive at?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I mean, here's my concern. Yeah, I've seen in this state significant variations in the same health care organization, same MHO, from county to county. Vast differences. Okay? And I want to know if you've seen that in your organization, too, and how you tried to stop that from happening. We all know that there's some certain standards and best practices for good outcomes.
That's correct.
We all know that. Getting that to happen on the ground can be real tough to do sometimes. And the variation we've seen in counties around the state are significant, even under the same MHO. So I want to know, how'd you deal with that? You've got counties that are split apart geographically. You've got different providers over the place. You've got different hospitals you're sending them to.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you grapple with that problem? And did you see initially a big difference? Does that difference still exist? Have you brought it under control?
There are differences. To some extent, the difference is you don't want to bring under control. There are different approaches, some that work better with different populations than others. What I've tried to do is put together structures and processes where counties can learn from one another. For instance, the last time we did our audits of county charts, the utilization managers from each of the counties went with our medical director and myself and our quality improvement specialists, and we went to each county and looked at the charts of each other's counties so we could learn from one another and figure out what you're doing that's working and what you're doing that's not working that you can learn from me about. So it's a model that promotes learning from one another. Are there variations? Benton County has the advantage and somewhat the disadvantage of having a hospital in their backyard. More people are going to show up from Benton County on the list of people who are hospitalized than Crook County. It's a long way to go to a hospital. And you're inherently going to have some difference in access based on how easy it is to get to a facility.
You mean they can't go to Pioneer? I think it's Pioneer Memorial in Prineville.
That's
the population in Crook County lives within 20 minutes.
There are crisis services available, but the only hospital in our five counties that has a psychiatric unit that can provide the specialty services at a hospital level of care is Good Sam Hospital. But now Park Place is an excellent alternative to hospital, and we're able through on the east side counties to have many members receive acute care services through Park Place, and sometimes they need to be transported to Good Sam for hospital care. But by virtue just of the access issue coming over the mountains, they're going to use hospital services less. That's true.
But St. Charles has a psych ward.
It's not a psych ward, it's a holding unit.
Yeah.
And it's specialized, though. I mean, it is specialized for psychiatric holds, which would be different than the unit that you mentioned in Prineville. So there is a level of specialty there, but they don't have a psychiatric program. But I have a feeling I haven't fully addressed your question, Representative Bates, and I would like to. There are variations, but it's an evolving process of learning from one another and having audits and oversight processes to get folks to have their services get better over time.
Mr. Chair, I think they actually have. Okay, what you've told me is something I guessed at and was concerned about. If you have a system set up that has available to it, geographically or otherwise, more access to inpatient care, your inpatient usage goes up, unfortunately, and the cost, of course, goes up with it. The idea of getting that under control is what you're trying to do, because we know inpatient care is expensive, and as expensive, it probably isn't in the long run as effective as outpatient care for maintaining these people. It's unfortunate geography plays a role in whether they get inpatient or not. I also am concerned about the difficulty that some counties seem to have putting a program together, a county which I happen to be living in and working in. The county next door does a much better job of putting a program together because I deal with patients from both those wings. And there's significant variation there, truly significant variation in the ones that I'm familiar with. And I'm hoping that organizations like yourselves are getting a hold of that and starting to bring it under control.
After every other quality improvement committee meeting, we generally have two-day meetings of the utilization managers from all the five counties where they review review difficult cases together and how they've individually handled them. They review the kind of programs they put together and what's working and what's not working. We've started regular meetings of the crisis team members from each of the counties so they can look at what they're each doing and learn from one another. So I think it's those kind of activities which we lead and coordinate which do lead over time to improved services. And the evening out of the types of care that are provided. And I think I'd like to yield to Bruce to talk about lane care.
I want you to ask me. Oh.
Let me stay on this for just a second. Not to belabor the point or badger you on that. I understand the state sends you a check every month per patient, some capitated rate, whatever the heck that is. Okay, the state also sends the county a check. I don't know if it's monthly, but Deschutes County Mental Health. How do you interface with their services? And I don't know, maybe Bruce is going to get to that.
That's what my presentation is really on.
Perfect. Go.
It's a great segue. And you've been asking great questions. I've learned more about EBHA today than I really knew in the past. So you'll have a chance to make me squirm a little bit with your good questions. You know, Lane County and Lane Care has a different problem. We have two psychiatric hospitals in Lane County, so we have ample access, which provides a good resources, but a whole different problem in terms of managing the costs of that. I'm going to refer you to this handout now, and I'm going to try and work it through because I know people want to get out of here. So the first page in that handout is really Seth and I worked on answering what is an MHO. So that's really duplication. I'm just going to let you read that if you want to at your pleasure. And I'm going to go to the next page and talk about what is lane care.
and I'm taking a different tact than Seth took. I'm going to talk about how it works in our community. And I'm not going to give you the diagrams or the budget or anything, but it's similar to what Seth reported, but different. Lane Care is a county-based organization. The contract goes to Lane County Health and Human Services, and I'm a department in Health and Human Services. I think Rob Roxborough was here yesterday. He is my boss, and Lane Care is integrated with those other with Lane County Mental Health. We have supervisors that I pay for part of their salary, and Al Levine, the manager of Lane County Mental Health, pays for part of their salary. We have care coordinators that we shared as clinicians in Lane County Mental Health, and we were able to integrate the dollars in ways that made sense in Lane County. I mentioned earlier that Lane County had a wonderful federal grant for building a system of care for children, and we built Lane care on top of that. We use the sort of infrastructures that were in place. So we have a governance structure where decisions are made where the participants in that have the same vote that I do. I can't go off and do what I want, even though it may be the best thing to do. But on that the operations council are three consumers of services, are three contractors. We have two representatives of the hospital care system, and one representative of the fully capitated health plan. And we have the medical director of Lane County Mental Health and Lane Care. We share medical director also. And the program manager of Lane County Mental Health is on there. So we're fully integrated with the community and with county services. Lane Care has been operational for 5.5 years. We cover an average of 35,000 Lane County citizens every month, and that was before the reductions with OHP Standard leaving. We have somewhere between 7 and 8,000 of those folks each year who access mental health treatment. We have a very comprehensive quality assurance system, like Seth has, and with a committee and subcommittees on those. We have contractors. Every contractor agency by mental health agency by contract has to participate. We have about 8 consumers. We pay our consumers to participate there. We have other systems partners like Senior Disabled Services. I forgot to say the DHS regional manager is also on our operations council. We have child welfare, DYS, schools represented in the quality assurance process. MHOs take in the capitation and they manage the risk, and every year that we've been operational, we've been financially sound. I think that some of the recent changes are pressuring us into increasing our anxiety a little bit about the future. Lane Care is a public MHO operated through Lane County Health and Human Services, we're able to use our governmental status to leverage and partner with other governmental entities. So we have significant blended funds with child welfare, with DYS, Senior and Disabled Services, the DD system, and partnerships with schools, United Way. We're able to use our funds as incentives with our contractors so we can have mental health funds stretch further. We are really committed to our partnerships with consumers. And we dedicate this year 1.5% of our capitation, I think it's $260,000, to direct contracts with different consumer-based organizations where we don't get encounter data. That's prevention, education, outreach funds. We support the Safe Incorporated, which is really one of the most successful consumer-operated drop-in centers. Oregon Family Support Network has a branch down there. We pay our consumers for participation. We pay for them to go to trainings. We have a similar additional flexible pool of funds of about $85,000, which are, again, not really your typical mental health type of fund, but we buy summer camps for kids. We pay portions of rents and things like that. We are a true partnership with our providers. They have three representatives on our operations council. We also have an executive committee, which deals more with operational decisions and day-to-day decisions. And we have the hospital system and our contractors represented there also. We negotiate billing targets, rates, authorizations with them. What we have set up this year is an internet-based system where our contractors register their patients, their clients, and they authorize the amount of services that those persons are going to need, and they bill against their own authorization. Lane Care does not even look at those authorizations until they've authorized more than 70 hours of services. 70 hours, that is a lot of mental health treatment. We manage by agreement with them. We negotiate in the beginning of the year, this is your average cost per patient, this is your total billing dollars for the year that your number of clients are going to serve, and you manage to that. We have a reserve pool. If they exceed that, they come and they say, we're going to go over that target. We need to negotiate something here. If they're going to go over the target and serve fewer clients, it's an issue. They're not meeting their contract. If they're serving more clients, then they have a justification for going over target. We absolutely support consumer choice for where they want to end up and request their services. And we have blended funding streams so that, for instance, we pay for a crisis stabilization program for youth. Lane Care pays for the mental health component, and child welfare pays for the residential costs there. We manage access in partnership with child welfare and the provider. There's three people that meet, and they review the people that might need to get in, and it's a total blended funding. We have the same sort of relationship with the Department of Youth Services. And it's
okay. You guys do that. Seth does. Do you guys do that? Sounds like you're managing a lot of the county dollars that go not to you, but go to the county.
I manage only the Lane Care dollars, but by virtue of the freedom of the managed care organization, I can use my. And I'm a little different because I am a county employee, and I can develop intergovernmental agreements.
Right.
You know, I'm on the Commission on Children and Families. I sit on the DHS Integration Board. On DYS boards. You know, there's a huge advantage in the system in Lane County to
because you're singular. You're one in oven to yourself.
That's right.
And we only manage the Medicaid dollars, the Oregon Health Plan dollars. Our counties get another check from the state for providing crisis services to unsponsored individuals. So there's several different funding streams coming to the counties for ABHA. Okay. And that's actually something we want to address, hopefully with the last few minutes. We've got some recommendations regarding that process because we think it creates some inefficiencies in the whole healthcare system.
Okay.
So you know, my point here is that there are advantages. You know,
you got a lot of synergy going.
We have a lot and a lot of excitement. It's a lot of partnerships. One thing I wanted to say, and this is a quote I pulled from a fully capitated health plan from the LIFA medical director. He said, "In Oregon," and he said, both for fully capitated health plans and for mental health organizations, they have been most effective where they have been locally managed and integrated with community services and programs. So, you know, to the extent, one of the problems with mental health funding is that there's a portion of mental health dollars that are integrated or are in the managed care organization, and then there are pockets that are managed through contracts directly with counties, between state and the county. There are portions that are managed between contracts between state and providers. And there's all sorts of different components of the fully integrated mental health system. And it there are challenges to having that system work really smoothly, efficiently, effectively, and cheaply when all those things are carved out. And there may be ways, and Lane County is in negotiations with the Mental Health Division, or OMHAS now, to see if there are ways that we can integrate more funds with different kinds of risk-based, you know, full risk, partial risk, minimum risk, no risk types of contracts. There's no reason why some of those services that are provided to our county residents couldn't be locally managed and integrated with the county, you know, fewer contracts with the providers, a single way of billing, a single data set. To say that OMHAS is very excited, I think they're very excited about this. They see it as an opportunity for the future.
What's the population of Lane County?
Between 350 and 400,000, I think. It's as large as the state of Connecticut.
Well, I bet your Representative Cruz didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. He's speaking geographically. Connecticut has more people than that.
So you've got the critical mass, large enough risk pool, all those things that make
exactly,
you know, a managed care organization viable.
Exactly.
Whereas our five counties couldn't. We're not big enough. They're not big enough by themselves to be able to do what Lane Care can do.
I have one other interesting statistic that if you look at the next page, it's sort of Lane Care statistics. And this is from the operational year of October 2001 to 2002, which I have the best data. And if you look at that bolded little dollar amount there, that's the dollars that we had, the dollars we'd authorized and what might have likely been the full cost of Lane Care if it hadn't been of the Lane County's mental health system, it hadn't been managed. Our capitation was $13.8 million. The risk was $16.2 million. We authorized that much dollars. We that was all on our books what we might have paid, but we managed it. Lane Care is a fee for service system. We don't sub capitate at all. We pay claims for services. The benefit of that is that we have the best encounter data because no one gets paid unless they submit a claim. So our encounter data is excellent. But we're a managed fee for service. We look at the same sort of, you know, how to look at utilization, how to move people out, but we manage a lot by population. And we turn that management and utilization back to our contractors as part of our contracts with them.
Okay. Now, you guys have some recommendations how we can make this thing all work better?
Yes.
Can I ask a question while setting up for it? Number 17 on that page, the last page you're talking about, Lane County, Lane Care Statistics.
Yeah.
Can you explain number 17 to me real quick?
You know, I would love to, because when I talk with our contractors, this is an issue that troubles them. And the issue here is that it's just about for every hour of direct service, there's an hour of administrative activities to support that hour. And it's not, you know, some agencies are able to get to, you know, 60-40%, some 50-50, and some 55% productivity. A lot of this is because there are such extensive rules about documentation, data submission, and, you know, when I ask them what their single greatest request would be, it would be to reduce the administrative burden that they have. You know, I would say that's also true for MHOs. You know, we have a relatively high load of administrative burdens. Our administrative payment has been reduced 11% effective March 1st. And, you know, we'd like to pass on some administrative reductions to our contractors. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It does answer the question, but it still gives me pause. I've heard rumbles that they spend as much time taking care of paperwork as seeing patients.
It is. It's pretty close.
And my question is, do you think that's true statewide? And if it is, are those paperwork requirements federal or state or county?
They're not county. I think they are state requirements, but I do believe that they are federal pass-through requirements.
Well,
some of them, at least. I think some of them might be administrative requirements. You know, they're just a whole buildup of administrative rules. For instance, one of our suggestions is to move to a behavioral health type approach. Right now, if you have a mental health course of treatment and a drug and alcohol course of treatment, you need to bill separately. You need to track, have different files. Everything is separate because they're separate funding streams, separate administrative rules. A single administrative rule with perhaps some more limited documentation requirements, you know, even if you free people up to do, or professionals to do, two additional direct service hours each week, would make a difference for them. Does that answer your question?
Mr. Chair, it does to a degree. I'd like to see what those requirements are so that we can see where they come from, whether they're federal or they're state, and then find who actually, you know, issues those to you and get them to cease and desist if we can. I mean, that's... You just can't get your arms around this thing. I mean, it's like most of it's paper chases, money going every which way you can't figure out, and everybody fighting over a smaller and smaller piece of the pie and the crumbs all the time. Now we're looking at a budget crunch that doesn't allow us to do that anymore. I just can't get my hands around this thing.
It would be a tremendous benefit to everyone if you could find some way to do that.
Well, presumably they're documenting the fee-for-service for you, right, as well?
The documentation, there is some documentation for that.
You're probably 5%.
But whether we were fee-for-service or not, we have to submit encounter data for everything. I mean, he has the same encounter data submission requirements that LaneCare has. If we don't submit those encounter data, our capitation rate goes down, so there's that little catch-22. But it's the rules about what has to be in your case file. There's a CPMS data reports that have to go in. There's all of these different requirements that things keep getting added, and when something gets added, nothing gets taken away. So there's an accumulation of federal and state requirements, probably because there's times when there has been something fraudulently done or mismanaged or something. It's a very accountable system right now.
Was that a polite way of saying that it's over bureaucratized?
Yeah. No, not that word.
Yeah, and he's saying he knew that Connecticut was this.
I'm glad the camera isn't here right now.
I think that's an excellent question and a perfect segue to what can be done to make this a better, more cost-effective mental health system. And Representative Bates, I know you commented, it was either in yesterday's session or the day before, so I was listening to one of the transcripts that it's really neat to be able to listen to on the Internet now, where you said, how are we going to put this puzzle together? How are we going to... We were hearing all this stuff. How are we going to get this puzzle together? And we really think that the three things you can do, as it says on the sheet, is simplify. And there's an adage, if you want to understand a system, follow the money. And if you follow the money in the system, you see it goes all over the place. And there are ways to have these administrative requirements be simpler. The fundamental process that needs to happen to make things simpler, and we'll talk about a number of iterations of this, is blending funding streams. If I could, I want to tell you a little anecdote from my experience on the commercial side that I really I think is quite apropos of this. When I was working at Prudential in the New York area, Prudential was very successful. They had incredible customer service. We had over 5,000 different variations in the health plans that were sold to employers in the New York metropolitan area. 5,000. In the last few years I was at Prudential, which was among the last few years of Prudential, we were having the pants beat off us by this upstart, U.S. Healthcare, which later merged with Aetna. How many policies do you think they were selling their customers?
Two.
Yes, it was in the 2 to 3 range. It was incredible what they could do by keeping things simple. It's incredible the services they could offer and the price they could offer them at. And these suggestions are mostly different suggestions around how Oregon can do that. The first, which we've mentioned previously, is blending the mental health and the chemical dependency funding streams. You're already moving in that direction. OMAS now stands for the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. So you've set up administratively an agency that is charged to oversee both, which is good. You now have someone in charge of both areas, but there's still two separate funding streams. You've got two separate oversight processes at the state, and to follow the money, and you've got duplication, which isn't just leads to excessive money being spent, but it's not good for care. People have mental health and chemical dependency problems together. You can't split someone's head down the middle very well. It doesn't provide very good care.
Look, you're schizophrenic.
Short-term cost.
Yeah. Well, it's split the head down the middle
The second opportunity for emerging funding streams, and you've all been asking questions apropos of this. You've got this Medicaid funding stream through Oregon Health Plan, and then you've got all these different multiple funding streams to the county to serve indigents and other publicly funded programs. There are states that have made significant progress in blending essentially all publicly funded mental health care together. I was just talking this morning with the fellow who I think he's the head of the National Association of Mental Health Providers, and we were talking about how Iowa and Massachusetts have been particularly successful in that regard. They've blended the widest range of public dollars for mental health. Michigan, I'd say, is sort of in the second tier of blending general assistance and Medicaid funding. And then Washington, Oklahoma, and Delaware are at least at the stage of integrating their data and looking at their mental health substance abuse data across a wide range of programs together as a precursor to blending these funding streams. He also happened to mention to me that they may have some consultation dollars available to help us in Oregon look at these opportunities and provide information to us about what's been done in these other states, and that might be it's always good to take up someone's offer to maybe help fund these kind of efforts. But I think learning from other states would be quite beneficial, I think, to this committee in understanding what the opportunities are to blend funding streams. We mentioned before the targeted case management pilots. We've very clearly demonstrated, and we'll be getting final reports in another couple of months, how changing the practice patterns of how 7-Eleven drugs are prescribed could save the state millions of dollars. Some changes are as simple as taking a pill and breaking it in half versus prescribing two pills. You look at the price difference, it's amazing. But there are other findings too, and you'll be getting that data shortly. And as we were just talking, final bullets about streamlining administrative requirements for providers.
So if you looked at my packet again and looked at the last page, it is a letter that Lane County has sent to OMHAS about our interest in sort of doing all of these.
And actually, one of the things that's in the letter, and it's one of the bullets I just went by, and that's looking at the opportunity to merge state general funds with local general funds to get a greater federal match. If Benton County, for instance, says, we really want to support our mental health services and don't want to walk away from so many federal dollars, and we're willing to put up another $200,000 to get a $300,000 federal match, why can't we set up a system that allows that to happen rather than hamstringing those counties that are willing to put up more money because they value these services? My closing comment is this. We have learned that when an individual is in crisis and they come to you for assistance, you don't want to analyze their personality. You don't want to take 5 years to figure everything out and resort it and put it back together. What we've learned, and there's lots of empirical data to support this, is the way to help individuals in a crisis is to identify what are their strengths, what is it that has worked for them in the past, what is it that they can do well, and help them work through a crisis by building on what they're already good at. We have a healthcare system that's in a crisis here, and I'd urge you, as you consider how to get out of this crisis, you look at what is it that's already in place that is really working well, and build on that. Build on your system strengths. And we feel very strongly, and we think that the data really supports us, that the mental health organizations are a strength of the publicly funded healthcare system in Oregon, and that these structures should be built on as you look to get the healthcare system out of crisis.
Questions?
Gordon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You talk about bringing all these funds from different county sources and all, but aren't those a lot of those funds coming from federal sources, or are they private sources? Because if they're coming from federal, you can't match against federal.
Some of the federal funds, let me put it this way, not all of the federal match funds for Medicaid come through OHP. Some go to other kind of block grant arrangements. I'm not a great expert on it, but I know we're not getting all of the, all the Medicaid money isn't being funneled through the Oregon Health Plan. But there are general fund dollars that go to counties to support indigent care, that go to support crisis intervention. There's no federal match for that. So we're talking about merging the federal match funds with non-federal match funds. And we think if it's adequately thought through, the MHO structures can be put at risk or have other kind of financial arrangements with the states to manage a wider and wider range of services and do it more cost effectively than having these multiple lines of funding and multiple lines of administration, et cetera.
If I could just say one other thing about that. In Lane County, what we've there's the state funds that come down. You're right, you cannot rematch federal funds. That's illegal. You could take other general funds and state general funds and match them, or you could take local general funds and you could match them. You could take school funds that are going to pay for special education classrooms and match them. You could take United Way funds or other donations to nonprofit agencies. And in Lane County, we've talked with United Way and with our nonprofit agencies, and they're intrigued by the notion of using local dollars to extend the amount of service available to local citizens. We leave a lot of our federal tax dollars in Washington. The more we reduce or limit our match to Medicaid. If I could have one closing statement, I just want to say that I was at one time in the nonprofit sector, mental health sector in Lane County, and I have the 15 years of experience to see the evolution. And I can tell you without doubt that the coordination, the systems relationships in Lane County now, the provider relationships, the consumer involvement, the connections with schools and juvenile justice and child welfare, senior and disabled services, the hospital system, those partnerships are so much better now than they were 6 years ago. So I'm supporting what Seth says. We should be looking at building and preserving the strengths of the system. We'll have to find cost efficiencies. We all know that. We should preserve as best we can what's really working well.
Any other questions? Three things.
One, Seth, I'm letting you off the hook on answering that question about how Deschutes County or Jefferson or Crook interfaces with the MHO, because you definitely shifted that to a singular countywide system where you guys have the benefit of all that synergy. And I appreciate your answer and the way you guys are working together. But I think the committee has real concerns, and you do too, you know, about how well the MHO works in these multi-county organizations where there's functionally multiple funding streams going into individual counties. Okay, that's A. B, you guys have been extraordinarily helpful to us, and I really want to thank you for coming up. I, in the 2 months we've been going, I think this is one of the most interesting, illuminating presentations we've had. I mean, you have answered a lot of questions for us, and we appreciate that. Third, and most important, did you guys pet the wallaby when you came in?
Four times.
That's absolutely. $50 per pet.
No, I didn't.
Is there a federal match for that?
Yeah, the coffee's $200, the cookie's about $1,000, and we will match that and send it back to you. Seeing no other business come before the committee, we are adjourned.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.